Tonight's speaker is Emily, who comes to us from Skyland. I have seen her around for a little while, but I always see her pop up at different places, which is really encouraging for me as a person who does not exactly like going new places. And I'm very excited to hear Emily's story. Hey everyone, I'm Emily and I'm an alcoholic. It's an honor to be up here. I forget that it is a miracle that I am standing here breathing a sober breath and that I'm with y'all tonight. So, my sobriety date is December 12th of 2019. My home group is Skyland, which is out in Brookhaven, not too far. I have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor. I am going to share a little bit about how I ended up here. So I can remember at a young age feeling just very out of place. I was adopted at a young age. I was 2 when I was adopted. My brother and I were adopted from Russia. So immediately those questions went through my head of like, well, why didn't they want me? Like, what's the issue? Why, you know, why, what happened? And I didn't see that I had a great opportunity. The family that I was adopted into, very loving, had a good upbringing, went to church and everything. But I always had that feeling of like, I just don't belong. You know, I hear that a lot in a lot of stories. And so I carried that with me for a while. And, you know, I always would wonder, like, why do I feel so intensely? Because even as I got older, I would, you know, be hanging out with my friends, and I would love to take pictures, and I would have the silly caption, you know, tagged with it. That would be a really deep philosophical caption with it, and, you know, I just always overthink everything. Catastrophic thinking. I remember, you know, lying in bed at night and wondering, you know, what would happen if, like, the house just went up in flames and I didn't make it out of here, and, you know, just that kind of thinking. Or I walk into a room and, you know, I think everyone's looking at me and thinking something. And, you know, sometimes that still happens today, but it's not as loud. One of the biggest things that since coming into AA and what it's given me is the ability to be okay with just being okay. And when I first walked into AA, that was not the case. My life was definitely in shambles. I don't exactly remember my first drink, but I do remember one of my first drunks. And I was kind of a little bit, I didn't start drinking until a little bit later in my life. I was about 18 or 19, because I thought it was taboo, you know? I wasn't really around my family, or they didn't really drink a lot around, you know, and so it wasn't until I was leaving, I had graduated high school and I was going into college that was when it really took off for me, and I started kind of experimenting. And really looking back, if something made me feel better or if I liked something, I wanted more of it. I remember being, again, a young kid in Easter, and I have all this chocolate in my basket, and I would eat the 3 giant chocolate bars, you know, because I just couldn't, you know, help myself, and then I would wonder, like, oh, man, I don't feel so great, but I would do it again, you know. So, I mean, if I liked something, I wanted more of it. One of the other things I would, you know, would say, even before I picked up a drink, was attention from anyone, you know, because it goes back to that something is wrong inside, and I don't know what is wrong, but I will use anything to change how I feel. And I didn't know that is kind of the basis of what alcoholism, what it is. I have a spiritual malady, and I didn't understand that. And, you know, so I have a brother who we're not even a year apart. We're not biological siblings. He is special needs. He has special needs. He has cerebral palsy. So, of course, he got all the attention. So anywhere we would go, the attention was on him, rightly so. You know, so it's this constant battle of, like, I want to be seen. I want to be heard. you know, and how can I get to that? And so, and that was a lot of what played into my drinking. I was like, oh, I felt like I could kind of fit in. I felt like I could go and talk to anyone. I just felt kind of okay. And really, I didn't realize I was seeking to just kind of blot out anything of what was uncomfortable. It got to a point where later in my drinking, I didn't care if you were drinking with or without me. I was going to go and drink, you know, and then some. And my brother and I, we lost our mom at a young age. I was 7, and so a lot of emotions, didn't know how to handle them. Any emotions, you know, I am maladjusted to life, and I sometimes believe I'm emotionally maladjusted, but another gift that AA has given me is definitely being able to not rely so heavily on that. You know, when the book talks about being maladjusted to life and, you know, full outright defective, you know, like I just can't deal with life, right? And so being able to come in here and learn from y'all how to go out there and be okay. And my life has always felt like just this roller coaster. Like, I just don't have control, and how do I gain that? And so after losing our mom, that was, of course, difficult. And so my dad was there to raise my brother and me. And, you know, one of the things that I really struggled with when I came in here was the guilt from how I treated him. Was very ungrateful, had everything I needed and more, but for me, it was never enough because, again, alcoholism, like, it's just not enough because I'm trying to fill this hole inside, right? But I was, you know, rebellious. You know, the first word I learned was no. And, you know, if I was told I was to go do something, why do I need to do that? If I was told no, like, why not? You'll understand one day, and, you know. And so, but looking back, all my family wanted, and my family today wants for me, is to be happy, be successful, be, you know, to grow into, you know, and be a decent person, right? And you know, I couldn't see that. I had these blinders on. And so it wasn't until, in school, right, I would have, like, my few friends. It'd be, like, the three of us. And, you know, I would be very, like, obsessive of, like, this is my friend, right? And, you know, have to do everything with them. And, you know, because that's how I get, you know. It's the fear of, like, okay, you're going to, like, either leave or, you know, just I need... It was that empty feeling again. And so, and I'm grateful that that's something I've been taught is, again, the spirituality of, like, the only thing that's ever been able to satisfy that ache is really coming in here, learning to connect with y'all, but essentially to connect with the higher power, who I call God. And like I mentioned, I grew up going to church, and I'm very grateful for that because that was very much a foundation, I think, that kept me from killing myself later in life because I did eventually get very suicidal. Didn't really want to kill myself, but I didn't want to be, I just didn't want to feel. But, you know, I was raised Catholic, and of course I had the typical of, like, well, why can't I go to my friend's church? They have cool music over there, and this is boring, and I don't want to be here. But my dad, you know, really wanted to raise us in, you know, in the church, and I'm grateful for that. Because a lot of that has been a foundation for me. And, you know, and my relationship has evolved. Even coming from when I first came into AA back in 2017, was the first time I went to a meeting, to today. And, like, and what was read before I came up here, it's running, like, how do I develop this relationship? Like, any relationship with a friend or a romantic partner, you know, both parties have to show up. And like my issue is I've never really been able to show up and be a friend out there or be that sister. Or with my relationship with God, I would just put God on the back burner. You know, I was managing my life and wanted to live how I want to. This constant chase and this need to always be doing something, could never sit still. Obviously, I keep, you know, fidgeting up here. I can't sit still. I was talking to a gal earlier who has 3 days sober, and that pain that feels like it's never going to go away, the hopelessness of where drinking brought me, because I didn't just pick up my first drink and boom, I was just off to races right away. That wasn't my experience. I didn't even like the taste of alcohol, really. But once I, you know, experienced that effect of what it did for me and how I could just disappear and be in oblivion, that's what I chased. But at the end, the hopelessness, the despair of, like, this is never going to end. I'm never going to get out of this. Like, I am okay with not waking up tomorrow. You know, it talks about the bedevilments, which is like I'm prey to misery. The depression, the anxiety, all of that just compounded. And even to a point where I'm crying, I don't know why I'm drinking. I don't want to drink anymore. And when I was talking to this young lady earlier and, you know, listening to her, what she was sharing, how she just wants to drink. She doesn't know how she's going to make it. I remember that. And I don't want to forget that feeling because that terror, you know, of this is what I'm doomed to die to this, you know, and part of me, like in Bill's story, I like welcomed the idea. I was okay with that. And thankfully, my guardian angel was working overtime and God had other plans. He was like, I'm not done with you yet. So I'm here standing today and it's easy for me to forget that. And so, you know, being able to have that obsession with it, and it didn't happen right away, and it has come back and returned to me in sobriety when I was not taking action. When I was, I've experienced, you know, I come in here, start going to some meetings, a lot of meetings, I get a sponsor, start getting involved, the things that we hear about, that I've been suggested that I should do. And at some point, I just stopped doing those things. And it didn't happen like that right away, you know, because when I first came into AA, it was in late 2017. At that point, I'm in college. I'm in my senior year of college. I've completed 3. And at this point, my life is pretty much a train wreck, and it's, you know, on these tracks, there's no brakes. There's no way to stop it. Consequences are piling up. And because I, like I had mentioned, I didn't start drinking till about 18 or 19. I was 21 when I first walked into AA. And so at that point, I was suspended from school. I was told, for the sake of the student body, for their sake and for your sake, go get help. And again, that's not how my drinking was at first. I remember there was a small window, and I was thinking, you know, this might be a problem. I'm starting to drink and drive, but I thought, what college student doesn't do these things? But at this point, things were definitely beyond and out of my control. My life was unmanageable, and like just like the first step it says, I could not see that. And you know, going from having fun at college parties, just trying to fit in and have a good time, to I'm being suspended. I've experienced going to jail, being detained in jail. I thought my life was over at that point. These consequences just kept coming. And, you know, so when I went to my first meeting, I remember before I went, my psych teacher, studying social work and psychology, he had suggested that I go to a meeting every day, and if I was his client, that he would admit me to inpatient. And I remember thinking he was insane, but I went to my first meeting, And then I walked out and I said, I am not an alcoholic. I have the potential to be an alcoholic because I didn't wake up needing to drink. I wasn't shaking every day. I didn't drink every day. But when I drank, I couldn't tell you if I was going to end up in a jail cell, if I was going to end up in a psych ward like I have a few times, been to a few treatment centers. And all of this is when I was living in Pennsylvania, and I was going to school in Ohio, not too far from Pittsburgh. So I started in sober in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And so a lot of my story is me, you know, I get sober, I stay sober for a little bit, I end up going to a treatment center and ending up in another city and doing it all over again. And I remember when I first walked into AA, though, I couldn't even get a few days, a week under my belt before I would go back out. And a lot of that was I was going to meetings, didn't have a job or anything, I was going to a lot of meetings, I was trying to connect with people, but I didn't get a sponsor right away. And a lot of what I've learned and what I'm learning, continuing to learn, is that I need to stay in action. Like, I need, you know, I can't, if I eat a meal, like, if I ate a meal yesterday, that's not going to hold me over today, tomorrow, the next week. I have to eat again if I don't want to be hungry. And, you know, same thing with the drinking. I couldn't just stay drunk off of, you know, last week's drink. I had to keep seeking that out. And it's the same thing with my sobriety. If I want to be okay, I have to continue moving my feet. And that is something that I don't like to do because I can be very lazy. You know, there's a lot of things I don't like to do, and apparently that's just life, but you do it anyway. And I didn't get that memo. You know, people try to teach me that, like, oh, well, you just get up and go to work. What? What do you mean? I can't, you know, that's a lot of the things that are, that it's insane and it's, like, amazing at the same time is that, you know, today I can show it to my dog on time. Like, actually early, not even just skirting in, sometimes that can happen, but, like, actually show up on time. Say, you know, be where I say I'm going to be. Before, it was, you're lucky I'm even here. You know, oh, this other shiny event thing popped up, I'd rather go do that, so I'm going to go do that and cancel on you and rain check on you. I did that with my best friend all the time. And I wasn't really a friend to her, you know? So, so a lot of my journey up in my earlier sobriety was I would sit in a meeting, not know what y'all were talking about, be waiting and looking at the clock, waiting to go, you know, when am I going to go eat? I'm hungry. I want to be out of here. Or smoke a cigarette. I just was not okay. And, like, today I have a little bit more of a peace where I can, you know, I can sit still a little bit longer than I usually can. I can show up, like I said. And, you know, job or no job, and whatever is happening in the world and in my life, like, as long as I don't pick up a drink, I'll be okay. And, you know, there's the governments that I was talking about earlier, like, those have come back for me. Like I said, I was sober for, let's see, this time around when I got sober, I was in treatment for my last time, and I was living out near Philly, and I thought it was a great idea to drive the two-hour drive to go see my boyfriend who was in sober living and make that trip constantly. Because that's what I do, is I, like, put the drink down, and then the relationship or the situationship or the acceptanceship, that is my focus. And it's not the, you know, oh, I came in here crawling and crying and I need to do this. Like, my intentions have always been, I mean well. Like, but living off of intentions has gotten me nowhere. And so, that's my MO. If it's not a drink, it's a gas. You know, and if it's not a guy, a lot of my, I still have the self-destruct button today. You know, it could be self-harm. I used to self-harm. And it was a vicious cycle. I called it the three B's, booze, boys, and blades. And it was, that's what I do. It's like, I pick up a drink. I can't stop. It's an itch I can't scratch. I feel horrible, so I have to go cover that up and do anything else to just blot that out. And I have no control. But today, you know, being standing up here, being like, I'm sober today, and being able to, that obsession, you know, I don't have that today. Do I still have insane thoughts that I want to go and, like, you know, run someone off of 285 and cuss them out sometimes in the car or whatever? Yeah. But I don't have to act on those things. You know, like, I'm a runner. If this town isn't working for me, I'm moving to that town. If this boss is, you know, ticking me off, okay, bye, I'm going to the next job. And today, there's many times I've quit my job 20 times in one day. But I didn't actually quit. I'm just like, I kind of need to pay the bills, so let me do the responsible thing. My first thought is still usually not the best one. And to have the accountability of getting a sponsor, getting that second opinion from that sponsor and other people here in the fellowship, to help me not run my life to the ground. Because that's what I do. Left to my own devices, it's just a matter of time. It could be tomorrow, it could be 10 years down the road. I do not, you know, sign up for doing that. I didn't wake up and say, you know, when I grow up, I want to go and destroy my life and hurt people in the process of doing that. And, you know, this book is like my GPS, essentially. It's like a blueprint. It tells me what I can do when I'm afraid, when I'm really mad at that, you know, at my boss, or whatever, and I can't let go of something. This book, it spells it out for me. And sometimes I need it even simplified a little bit more, and that's where having that sponsor and having people in the fellowship house, like, helps. It's so weird to have to look up in this book that I don't understand. And, you know, one thing I've also learned, and that I sometimes forget, is that I don't have to wait for the miracle to happen. It's happening right now. I'm always like, you know what, I'm gonna wait till I feel motivated, I'm gonna wait till fill in the blank, I'm gonna wait till, you know, but that never gets me anywhere, because tomorrow never comes. If I don't act today, or right now, then what's the point? You know, I might as well just, that's how I lived my life. And that's how I can still live my life today. You know, like, so the miracle's happening right now. My heart is beating. I have a heartbeat. I'm standing up here. I'm alive. And there's some days I'm like, you know, that's not that great. When I first walked in, I was not feeling that at all. Nope, not feeling the love, not feeling any of that. I don't want to be here. Why are you smiling? Why are you looking at me? I always joke and say I'm like a cat, like, love me, but on my terms, like, go away. I need my space. And I still can get, like, you know, just very, you know, when the book talks about being restless, irritable, and discontent, I very much feel that when I am not as much in line and doing the things I need to do. And sometimes it's just a day. Sometimes I have a bad day, and that's okay, too. But if I sit in that, and if I prolong that, and I sit and think about it more, and I go and, like I used to love to do, sit in my car, throw on the really depressing music, and think about it more, you know, like the rain's up, running down the window, I'm just being dramatic, like that's what I like to do, and just be a drama queen. But, you know, when it says, like, we trudge the road of happy destiny, and it also says begrudgingly, a lot of the time, I'm like, I don't want to do this thing, but I'm going to do it. You know, I say a prayer, I call someone, I'm like, hey, I really don't want to go to this meeting tonight, or I don't want to go, and whatever it is. That's what really helps me, too. It's like, I get, like, it's an adventure. I get a ton of people, we go to the same meeting, we're in the same car, we go out to eat. It's a whole adventure, you know, and say, like, hey, you're getting in the car, we're going to go to this meeting, cool, okay. And that's what a lot of people have done for me. Those are the moments and the memories that I hold on to is what, when I have come in or when I've been just beaten down, I'm having a bad day, even like today or not necessarily today, but, And then people, they show up. You know, if I, learning to ask for help is still one of the hardest things I have to do. I don't have to do that, but I've experienced when I don't ask for help and when I try to handle everything on my own and I bottle it up and I don't get honest about what's really going on in my head, that's what takes me back out. That's what takes me to a place of that isolation and that the desperation, the despair, and the terror is when I start isolating and doing that. And that's what led me to me being dry for 2 years. That's what led me to, I couldn't look anyone in the eye when I was at the grocery store. You know, that's what led me to, you know, saying, what's the point? This last year, looking back, you know, it's definitely been some challenges for myself. Going through different transitions, switching home groups, switching sponsors, just life. Things, life is ever changing. And learning to adjust to that, you know, to change as an alcoholic is still not my favorite thing to do. And, but you know what? Like, I've gotten through it sober. I've gone through it. I'm okay. I didn't spontaneously combust. You know, life is okay. Life is good. And what's different is my perspective on things. Is, you know, not, life is not all just dreary and like, what, you know, and horrible, and like everyone's coming at me. It's, you know, it's changing that perspective of, oh, look at the things I have in my life. Actually wanting the things that I have in my life. And it's not like that every day. I mean, this last year, there's definitely been, I got to a point about a year ago where I was like, oh my gosh, what's the point? I didn't want to drink, but I'm like, what do I do? And, you know, so went through some changes and, needed a perspective change and, you know, started looking back at, oh yeah, I'm powerless. I can't go and manage my life. The lack of power, the need of power was not there. And that's what the book has told me is like, okay, I try to run my life and it's not really working out. And so what do? I get back and involved. I go and see where I can be helpful. I can, you know, and I get to do those things today. You know, I don't really have as much freedom when I'm in a jail cell and a turtle suit. You know, I can't just go pick up the phone and go, you know, call a friend or go eat whatever I want. Like, I don't have that freedom in a jail cell. I don't have that freedom when I'm in a psych ward. When I'm drinking, period, I don't have that freedom. The freedom today, you know, it comes from, I always thought the freedom was like getting whatever I want. You know, being a kid, I was like, why isn't everything free? Well, you know, it just doesn't work that way. But with, thing is like, with the freedom comes from, you know, or with the freedom, there's responsibility. And that's something I like to run from because I'm afraid. At the end of the day, I'm just afraid. I don't want to, you know, it's just all the fears, you know, just afraid of living life. But the beauty is the perseverance. That's another thing that I've learned and am learning is the perseverance, right? Because like I said, the miracle is happening right now. And courage. It takes a lot of courage to come in here and to ask for help. And not even just in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it takes courage to do this. And even though, you know, I was kind of thought like, oh, I can't have faith and be afraid at the same time, you know, but that's not the case. I can, it's through taking those steps, not knowing what may happen or the outcome, but taking those steps regardless, because people teach me I can learn how to trust the process. I can learn to, you know, keep my head where my feet's at. When I want to be way off in the future, or when I'm like just living in the past and I'm chained and bonded to the past. I can't let this thing go, you know, that happened to me, or like learning what my part is in things. Coming here, taking the steps, learning that my life is unmanageable. Not just when I'm drinking, but when I'm not drinking, it can be unmanageable. Learning that, okay, I can't run my life. I need my life's a little insane. I need something bigger than me. Anything, you know, there's a God and I'm not God, right? And, okay, so surrendering my life, like, and my will over to God, okay, so that's me wanting to ask for help, really. Just continue moving my feet. You know, and coming in here and actually taking, like, a thorough look at how I've been living, looking at the fears, the resentments, and all the things, like, you know, was it step four, and taking a look at that. Because it hasn't been until I've gone through, looked at these things, grown, because if I'm not aware of something, I'm not going to do anything different. And so when I take a look at these behaviors in my life, I can now do something different. And it doesn't happen overnight. Rome was not built in a day. And so, but I have to start somewhere. And then to get honest and share that with someone, in my experience, it's usually been with my sponsor. And then, you know, I still have a lot of defects that pop up. I still can, you know, act on out of jealousy. I can still lash out. I can still, but they're not happening as frequently, right? And so, you know, continuing to pray for that, for God to even use, I didn't realize or know that God can use what I thought were the worst parts of myself or my life for the good. Nothing in God's economy is wasted. And, you know, so to be able to, for when people have shared their experiences with me and given me that glimpse of hope, and that was enough to get me through that next hour, that next day, that period of my life, that season of my life. And really, when it talks about how Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship, that's one of my favorite things about AA is that I can go anywhere and have been to different meetings, and like, y'all are my people. Y'all know what it's like to feel these things and to not know what tomorrow is going to look like and, you know, to feel like everything was just taken away. Y'all speak my language. You know, and to go through continue with the process of, okay, I need to make the things right. I've made some decisions. I've hurt people. A lot of my amends have been living amends. Like doing the next right thing, and really doing the next thing right is what I've learned. And continuing to take that inventory, you know, throughout the day, but at night, looking over my day and seeing these patterns that pop up and that are happening, and that I still make some not so smart decisions in sobriety, but learning to not let that weigh me down and get into self-pity and to do something different moving forward. But I can't do that without the help of y'all and without God's help. I alone, I am not standing here because of myself. And it's taken me a while to see that. Because I thought that was just some lofty stuff, you know, and when y'all say, like, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and all the things and, you know, the one-liners, and I just roll my eyes. But I can see that today. And really to just continue doing that. The longer I stick around, the more I see, like, the scales are, like, continuing to fall from my eyes. The blinders come off. You know, to find some gratitude in the fact that, like, that I'm not drinking today, you know, and to just, again, like, be okay on the inside. And even if I don't always feel that, I know that my feelings aren't always the indicator, and they're not always in the driver's seat. I'll wrap it up with this, but one of my favorite lines in the back, and the stories, they're good if you ever get a chance to read them. But in my chance to live, it says, when I'm willing to do the right thing, I'm rewarded with an inner peace no amount of liquor could ever provide. When I'm unwilling to do the right thing, I become restless, irritable, and discontent. It is always my choice. Through the 12 steps, I've been granted the gift of choice. I'm no longer at the mercy of a disease that tells me the only answer is to drink. If willingness is the key to unlock the gates of hell, it is action that opens those doors. So so that we may walk freely among the living. I used to be a zombie and just, like, barely exist and survive. I was a bystander of life. Like, I was not, like, today I'm a participant of life. I'm not perfect, but I have a lot of people in my life, meaningful relationships that I, you know, that I have all because of coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I've tried all the things, therapy, church, all the things that are great tools, but that alone wasn't enough to keep me sober. It wasn't until I used that, but really got involved and got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous and started moving my feet and learned consistency and what that looks like, that I've been able to stay sober one moment at a time.
First I slip and then I quit to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me and finally wake in there I see. I look into for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise is, all is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God wants us, we walk eternally. Look into love's window, for a heart that beats for me. Take me where the promise. Take me where the promise is.